They'd gone in for feather bedding. You've got a new process, a better way of doing things, and the production didn't come up to where it should. The man put the same amount of human effort in it. There was an old, it came out of the old guilds, I guess, in Europe years ago, of trying to restrict the number of apprentices and the knowledge that men had, so that a reduced number of people could demand from the society as a whole a greater value for their services than they could have gotten if they had free competition. And this straightened out that point, the men would cooperate with the management in trying to accomplish more. And the management in return would share with the men the annual improvement that would be made possible by this combination of effort. And the fifth principle, that cooperation and industrial peace would better promote the prosperity of the men and the company and the whole nation than would industrial strife and strikes. So I'm a little extra enthusiastic about what can be accomplished. This last year in General Motors didn't discourage my enthusiasm, incidentally. I'm sure that none of us, myself included, would have been willing to say a year ago that General Motors could produce 3,800,000 cars and trucks in addition to the locomotives and Frigidaires and all the other things we made. We didn't think we would have, none of us thought we had that much capacity. We couldn't have done it without the willing cooperation of the workmen, 450,000 of them. There's no way to force 450,000 people to do what they don't think's fair and right. And as I say, I'm a little enthusiastic about it. I think those same principles could be applied generally and will help us in the emergency the country faces now. Some people have questioned the cost of living contract terms because they say that must be inflationary. We don't think it's inflationary or deflationary. It simply recognizes inflationary pressures if they exist. It's true that it doesn't perhaps put brakes on inflation, but we don't think there's any good reason to try to ask the workmen to stand the inflation in the country if other forces cause inflation. And as a matter of fact, we don't think there's any practical way to do it. The annual improvement factor, we think, is also a sound thing. And it's neither inflationary or deflationary, because it assumes that by cooperative effort, you can produce more, so you won't have to raise the prices. You can produce more with the same number of hours. We have great need in our country now for production. We're going to have to, all of us, work longer hours and harder. And I think that these principles, recognized in relation between our business and industry and the workmen, are essential if we're going to make this great effort, which is obviously needed. I guess I'd better get back on the subject I had in mind. Back to this general subject of education for a free society. My continuing remarks assume that all present believe that a free society is desirable and the only one that reasonably fulfills the hopes and ambitions of mankind. I know, however, that there are hundreds of millions of people in the world who are living under some form of communist or socialist society. Also, I know that there are some, even in our country, who are promoting some form of socialism or communism, or advocating state planning, subsidies, or government controls that are undermining the fundamentals of our free society. Accordingly, I'm going to take a few minutes and discuss the principles and philosophies of a free society as compared to some form of totalitarianism. Some people seem to think that there's a great difference between socialism and communism, but Karl Marx used the two words as synonyms. The best definition of a communist I've heard is that a communist is a socialist in a hurry. Now, those who directly or indirectly promote communism and socialism in our country can be classified in four groups. First, those who are following the party line from abroad. They think that the whole world is going communistic and that they will further their own selfish interests by being one of the early leaders of the movement here. The second group, those who for one reason or another are dissatisfied with their situation in life and are unable or unwilling to make the effort to improve it. They are misled by the claims of the Marxists that communism will result in greater material benefits for the mass of the people. Individuals in this group are deceived by these promises and teachings and think a communist or socialist type of society would benefit them individually with less effort on their part. Third, those who are class conscious and are impressed by the bitter philosophy of Marxism, which preaches envy and hate for those who have accomplished more and have more. This philosophy appeals to the baser qualities of human nature and to those who, if they cannot have more themselves, do not want anyone else to have more. Such thinking is destructive, not constructive. It limits initiative and denies responsibility. It promotes ill will and destroys happiness. The fourth group who are promoting communism and socialism are those who, in their eagerness to make social progress, do not clearly understand the difference between being social-minded and socialistic. Certainly, it is a sound social and economic objective to help men and women to protect themselves against the individual hazards of life. But this cannot be done by destroying individual responsibility or depriving them of their freedom. After this last contract in General Motors, providing for some additional pensions, the first effective date was October 1st this year, and men who were past 65 and wished to do it could retire. And one of our plants, a man somewhat past 80 who was hale and hearty but really getting up in years, wanted to retire. We decided that we'd make a little more of an event out of it. After all, it is something for a man to retire. And so, in each case, instead of sending them a check or a notice or something, someone of importance in the company would say goodbye to him and talk to him a little bit, the personnel director, and make a little event out of it. I'm telling you what this old man said. He was very appreciative. He'd worked for the company for 30 years. His pension, perhaps it doesn't seem like much, was an extra $45 in addition to his Social Security. And he said, My wife is getting very frail. She's losing her mind, really. We've been married 55 years. My friends say that I better put her in an institution, and I know what that would mean. And this $45 means that I can retire and take care of her at home the rest of her life, and that's what I'm going to do. Now, it's pretty hard to say that that kind of a thing destroys individual responsibility. Many of these people in this fourth group who do not understand the difference between being social-minded and socialistic do not understand that the opportunity to earn a profit promotes efficiency, increases production, and gets the job done. Whether or not an activity can pay its way and make a profit is the best overall measure yet found to determine whether or not the activity is worth to the people what it costs in human effort. In a free country, the customer is the boss, and if he would rather not have the goods or services offered than the money he has to pay for them, he will not buy, but will either keep his money or spend it for something else. Nor do some of these same people understand that the right to own property was one of the first recognized human rights and is fundamental if men are to feel free and be free. It is really fundamental to the nature of man to aspire to be free. The spirit of man requires freedom, just as a plant requires sunshine. Therefore, the people of a nation cannot be happy, prosperous, and contented under any form of society which represses them as individuals and limits their personal freedom in either a spiritual or material sense. In the last 30 years, our Western civilization has been increasingly challenged by the followers of Karl Marx. Socialist and communist leaders get the people's confidence by promising great improvement in their physical welfare if they will adopt the communist society. By the time the people find that these promises are not being fulfilled, they are already trapped. It is too late. They have gone down a one-way street. Wherever people have adopted this socialist philosophy, dictatorship has been the result. Not only have they lost their individual freedom, but the promised material benefits have not materialized. In addition, in many cases, the world has witnessed a resurgence of the most savage barbarism. The world is in danger of slipping backward, not just to the horse and buggy days of 50 years ago, but back, I fear, to the chariots of the Caesars and the elephants of the Hannibals, back to the pagan disregard of human life, back to the days of Genghis Khan. The fundamental principles of communism are so diametrically opposite to the ethical principles on which our Western civilization depends that communist dictators promptly suppress all churches and all activities supporting the rights of the individual. This also is the reason why our country is singled out for propaganda attack by totalitarian dictators. This is forcing our religious and educational organizations, through their leaders, to take a positive position against communism and socialism.